So good morning again. I'm no Reg and I'm no Gus Bess, so. I'm also doing something I've never done before. Whenever I give any kind of a public thing more than like a couple of sentences, I write everything out, like I write it out like an essay, and I study it. I don't read it word for word, but I like that's how I get myself ready, and I decided I want to see if I can do this extemporaneously. So,
would you feel better with the guitar in your hand?
Yes, I would. I did write myself some notes, but thank you. So to start with, let me actually see if I can get something to go up on the screen here. Because I'm no Reg, which means I understand technology a little bit. So. Let's see if that worked. Let's see if we can. Babylon Bee. How many people here are familiar with the Babylon Bee? Okay. So here's a little article. The nation's Christians are shocked that popular CCM artist doesn't have robust theology. After a popular CCM artist recently gave a vague answer when asked whether or not homosexuality is a sin, the nation's believers expressed their utter shock that someone in the Christian music industry doesn't have a strong, well-grounded theology of God and the Bible, and so on. Anybody else seen this before now? Okay, so I think Patty sent that to me, and I couldn't help but laugh and cry a little bit on the inside at the same time. Because there's a lot of reality to that. So there are actually three things that I want to talk about this morning. One is singing together in general. Why are hymns better than contemporary Christian music? I'm waiting to see if anybody throws stones at me for that one. And why I choose the music that I choose, sort of how I go about what we do and what my thinking is about why we play the music we do. So first off, singing together. This is a book that was given to me, and I can't remember for sure if it was given to me by the Irishes or by the... Okay. So, thank you, Mark and Fran. I've been reading this, and it's a great book by Keith and Kristen Getty, who wrote... What's the song they wrote that's famous? I forgot the name of the song. Doesn't matter too much. But it's a great reflection on, you know, their journey through understanding what communal singing is, why we should sing as Christians and not both individually and together as a community. What does that do for us? And so as I've been going through this, just kind of peeling apart my own understandings of, well, what does the Bible say about singing and worship to God? What does what is the impact of singing together? And this is where we'll kind of play off the, what's the best kind of music to sing together? Is it, in fact, traditional hymns, or is it contemporary music or whatever? Fun book to read. It's short and simple. It's in little chapters, and it's actually set up as a study book. So you can read a chapter, get together with some people, and discuss the questions they have at the end of it. If you're interested in kind of getting a sense of two people's views on this topic, and it's a really big topic. A lot of people around the world are arguing over this kind of thing. I think they've got a pretty good take on it. I don't agree with every word they say, but I agree with a lot of it. And it's always good to chew on, you know, get some meat into your thinking about why we do what we do. I mean, we spend almost half of our service singing together, so presumably we think it's important, right? God does command us to worship Him. He says that we should sing. There's a lot of biblical reasons why we should sing and why we should come together as a congregation and do that. So this sort of not really an advertisement for this book, but, you know, in general, I think it's a worthwhile study to say, what is it that we're doing internally? But I want to dive into the questions of what That's gone again. Okay, what? Why hymns are better than contemporary music? So, video person. Why can't I ever remember anybody? Can you put up the next slide from what do you call it? OpenLP. While she works on that, I'll tell you what the next slide is. The next slide is the lyrics to the song Undignified. You know the song by Matt Redman, and I think, a lot of people have done it. The lyrics are, I will dance and I will sing. I will dance and I will sing to the Lord for my King. Nothing, Lord, is hindering this something in my soul, right? There's a reason I asked her to put them up there, because I can't remember. I will dance and I will sing to the King. The entire song is, I'm going to dance, I'm going to sing, and I will dance. No, I can be even more undignified than this. I mean, theologically speaking, that's not the deepest thought I've ever come across. Yeah, to be mad for my King, nothing, Lord, is hindering. There we go, passion in my soul. So, you know, let's move from there to the next hymn that I've got up there, Before the Throne of God. Can you get Before the Throne of God up there? Before the throne of God above, I have a strong and perfect plea, a great high priest whose name is Love. Next slide. Whoever lives and pleads for me. Now, in my opinion, this sounds a little bit more rich in both in terms of the poetry. Lyrically, it's a little deeper. It's expressing a little bit more meaty topics theologically. So obviously, hymns are better than contemporary music, right? Well, so I intentionally picked a particularly, I don't, maybe unfair to use the term vacuous, but I'm going to say a particularly vacuous song, Undignified. It doesn't have a lot of lyrical content, and whereas this song does have a lot of lyrical content. But first of all, important to remember that that's just one. I mean, like, I go and say, well, let me find the least deep contemporary song I can find and give you that one as to compare it against a nice, rich, old-fashioned hymn. I've actually got a... I found a website that says basically makes this argument. Hymns are better than contemporary music. Every church should sing hymns. Now, we do sing hymns, and I think that's an important part of our worship time. But let me just go through some of the arguments that this website made about why contemporary Christian music isn't as good as hymns. So hymns teach theology. This must be the first reason. Show me churches' songs, and I'll show you their theology. I think that's a very good point, right? In fact, if we're not picking songs that have good theology, we've got a problem, because I would be willing to bet that most people spend more time listening to Christian music than they do listening to Reg's sermon throughout the week, right? You come in here and you listen to Reg's sermon, but you go home and you don't listen to that recording again, probably. You probably do turn on the radio and listen to a bunch of music. So the music that we're listening to is really important. That's the stuff that you're drilling into your head over and over and over again. That's the stuff that if you... you know, if you're allowing the wrong stuff into your head or not even getting the right stuff into your head, you're missing out on an opportunity. Choosing with the volume of music that we have out there, I don't mean loudness, with how much music there is out there for us to choose from, there is plenty of really good, meaty music. And it's not at all true that it's only in the hymns, right? This article is claiming, well, that's where you get all the good stuff. There's lots of great contemporary music that has really good theology in it. But you do have to be a little more cautious. The fact is that in the time that most of the older hymns were written, there was a little bit less, it was a little bit less easy to just feed something into the machine and have it spit it out and say, yep, we're going to use that. The fact is the contemporary Christian market is many, many millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars generated every year, and there are people who are looking to make money, you know? It's more important to get a good tune than it is to get good lyrics. And that's an interesting thing about hymns. If you talk about hymns, traditionally the term hymn does not refer to the tune at all. hymn actually is referring to the lyrics. And so lyrics or hymns are set to different tunes. So there are certain tunes or certain songs that you almost certainly know that have more than one tune. What's the Christmas one that always comes up? Away in a manger? Away in a manger, no crib for a bed. And what's the other one? Away in a manger, no crib for a bed, right? So those, that's one hymn, two different tunes that use that same hymn. In contemporary Christian music, we don't think of it that way at all, right? The song is the song. The lyrics and the music go together. And it's not even just the melody, the harmonies, but what the instrumentation is. Everything is one unit, and you're used to listening to Matt Redman's version of this, or Matt Chris Tomlin's version of it, or whatever. So we think of these things all together, and a lot of times the music becomes extremely important, and we forget about the lyrics. And suddenly you're listening to something that, if you thought about it carefully, you'd realize, I'm not sure that's quite right, you know? My point is, absolutely be cautious about the music that you're singing, especially if you're listening to music. Think about what the lyrics are. They will engage your soul, I guarantee it. If you love songs, they're gonna get to be part of you. So do be cautious about it. Think about the lyrics carefully. What am I saying? Just because it's on K-Love doesn't automatically make it, necessarily correct theology. Okay, next thing. This one I love. Hymns allow, and here's another reason why hymns are better than contemporary Christian music. Hymns allow for a more authentic response of emotional expression. Okay, so this is something that I struggle with a great deal, because there are people who love hymns and aren't all that big on contemporary music. There are a lot of people who love contemporary music and find hymns painfully boring. So, I mean, how can we say one gives a more authentic expression of our, what did I say? Emotional expression, right? It's a silly argument, but it's one that people who hold to that particular viewpoint can't see past, right? The fact is, there's a lot of young people who've never been exposed to traditional hymns sung in four parts, just a cappella or accompanied by a piano or an organ. And like, if you haven't been exposed to that and you've been listening to rock and roll all your life, it's, we'll call it tame, right? It's pretty subtle. There's something in, you know, having a drum that's just keeping you going and gets your blood going and your whole body just gets a moving. And, you know, you don't get that with hymns typically. Then again, if you grew up in that tradition, it is amazing how powerful the hymns can be. Again, largely because of really good lyrical content, good theology, good meaty lyrics that really keep your brain engaged in that part of it. But then, you know, a mighty fortress is our God. It's a pretty, you know, charge them up song. If you've grown up in that context, if you haven't, it's really hard to get back in time. And let me say something about that. If you fall on one side or the other, if you tend to listen only to contemporary music, or you tend to listen to and sing only hymn-type music, it's really worth your time to try to bridge the gap for yourself. I mean, we do live in a world that is, I don't want to say overrun, there's an awful lot of contemporary music out there. It's hard to get away from it. Even in the Christian world, you're going to be exposed to it. So you might as well figure out what's going on there. You know, take the time to listen to some of it. If it doesn't fit your style, if you don't like it, just take the time and try to understand what it is that people are looking for. I, myself, musically, and this is purely musical, this has nothing to do with theology, but musically, I used to be a lot more of a snob than I am now. I used to have a sense of, you know, this music is good, that music is bad. And I, by the way, am the guy who gets to make the dividing line. And and one of the things that I started to realize was that some people are listening to a different thing than what I'm listening to. I'm listening typically to things like, what are the chord changes and what are the overall structures of the song? What makes this whole musically music theory-wise hold together? What's going on in there? And I started to realize, oh, you know, some people just like the texture of the song, the kinds of sounds that are going on in there. They like the sound of an electric guitar screeching through. Like, it doesn't even matter what the song is. They just want to hear the screechy electric guitar. It might be that you just are attracted to certain kinds of drum beats. There's a lot of different things, and this is the kind of thing that you can look for when you're saying, well, what is it that other people see in the music that I don't like? And so if you don't like contemporary music, you're still going to have to listen to it, so you might as well figure out how you can make yourself like it, or at least a little bit, or at least appreciate it, understand what it is that's moving other people. Again, not at the expense of just accepting it all, because, again, you really do want to look at the content. What's the theology? And on the flip side of that, by the way, you know, listening for the textures that you hear in hymns, listening to individual voices and how they blend together is, if it's not something you're used to, do it, because it's amazing how powerful that stuff can be. Just especially because it's something that people do together. We can stand shoulder to shoulder with each other and just sing these hymns, and we're the ones making the music. Not an electric guitar, not a drum kit, not even an organ, it's just us. And that's a very powerful thing for us to do, to be able to be in fellowship with each other and with God through that worship process. All right, what else? Hymns display a social consciousness. I don't even want to touch that one. Whatever. That's another reason why we should sing hymns, like, because if there weren't any social consciousness in modern hymns, modern songs. But here we get back to hymns were written for congregational singing, and that's what I was touching on, so I overstepped my previous topic. Hymns really are good for congregational singing, and there's an important reason why. Hymns use very simple rhythmic patterns, okay? They don't use a lot of syncopation. Syncopation is those notes that, if you're not familiar with the term, it's like the notes that fall in places that feel weird, like you almost feel like you're falling over. We do this all the time in modern music. Modern music is actually based on syncopated rhythms, things that are awkward and difficult for people to sing together. Hymns are very regular. They tend to have, in fact, very often they're the individual words or syllables line up with an individual note, and it just goes dot, 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 no problem. Everybody can do it together. With syncopated music, it's very hard. Not only is it hard because not everybody's trained at following those syncopated rhythms, but, and you'll see this in me all the time, when you use syncopated music, it's very easy to change the syncopation, to do the rhythm a little bit different than the other guy did it. So you're used to listening to Matt Redman sing something, and then I sing it a little differently, and now you can't really sing it with me. You know, we're off a little bit because I'm syncopating it in a different way. And that's sort of the nature of the syncopated music. So this is one point for the hymns, right? They're really good at keeping us all singing together as a group. And again, the flip side with contemporary music, it almost demands that you have a band and a lead singer, right? Somebody's who is doing that, and for exactly this reason, because the syncopated music is very difficult to keep up with. It's very difficult for everybody to do it the same, so you gotta have somebody who's laying down the law, and this is how we're gonna sing this one. So there's the one thing that I would say hymns have they're a really important part of congregational singing, because they really encourage people to be able to sing not along with the lead singer, but together as a congregation. And now you're not focusing on the singer, you're focusing instead on the congregational singing and bringing that to God. I am not saying by any means that you can't worship while singing along with a lead singer, but you can perhaps see the difference in having hymns really gets a much more communal thing going rather than we're an audience. And in fact, this is a term people frequently use. Worship leaders frequently talk about the audience. And if I ever slip and say that, you know, I might. But I'm really intentional about not saying audience because I don't think of the church as being my audience. Yeah? I'm not here to perform for you. And I don't expect you to come here to listen to me sing. We sing together. And we are a singing church, and I really appreciate that. Anyway, enough on that one. okay, here's the funniest bullet in this little article about why traditional hymns are better than contemporary music. The hymn tradition readily accepts new contributions. The advent of contemporary service has polarized old versus new, but that shouldn't be the case. Like, wait a minute. Isn't that precisely what you're doing? Aren't you the guys that are saying, no, the old is good and the new is bad? And at the same time, but we accept new things. That's neither here nor there. I just thought it was a funny... Obviously, you didn't think it was funny as I did. I laughed out loud. Hymns naturally lend themselves to liturgical use. Yeah, again, I can't really buy that as being particularly different about hymns. But the next bullet item says you can do beer and hymns. This was actually the way, beer and hymns. I don't know, has anybody seen this tradition? Or I don't, it's not really a tradition, but this trend. There are actually people, I first saw this in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There are people who are going into bars and doing hymn sings in bars. And, you know, they get the whole bar to join in. They're just doing very common hymns. And, you know, it's kind of a neat idea, but you can do that with contemporary music, too, I suppose. So I don't know how that sets us aside. Again, hymns unite the generations of Christian people. I don't know that they perhaps unite many older generations, but again, there is a split with younger people who aren't part of that tradition and feel, in fact, very isolated from it, which brings me back around to the point that I'm making. I think it's really valuable for us all to be trying to learn to appreciate hymns if that's not our tradition, and modern music if it's not our tradition, so that we can actually... be in deeper fellowship with our fellow believers who happen to come from a different generation or a different tradition. I mean, we got several people here in the church. I know John came from a church where they don't use any musical instruments at all during their worship. There are probably people here who came from churches that use organs and choirs, like me. There are certainly people who have grown up on the modern rock and roll. So point of all of this is, regardless of what style of music you're listening to, I really don't think that we can say one style is better than the other, the old is better than the new, or the new is better than the old. They are all valid ways of worshiping God. But, again, final point on this, we do want to be really cautious about what we're singing. Even in the older hymns, there are some things that have snuck through that you want to take a quick look at and say, But with that said, it's also really important. Several articles I was reading in preparation for today were you know, picking apart individual songs. And, well, this could mean that. Or, you know, it sounds good if you read it once through, but if you read it a second time, you realize it might mean that, you know, this guy was a three-headed monster or something. Like, just almost making up excuses to criticize the songs. The most important thing for us to recognize in our worship is that hymns are not scripture unless they are scripture, right? We cannot use, and the article that I put up at the beginning was really making this point, if we as Christians are using our hymns or our contemporary Christian music as our source of theology, we're in trouble. They are not good sources of theology. They're good support for our theology. They can be. They can be good to help reinforce ideas. But that's not where you're going to get the factual information. You definitely want to be going into the Bible for that. And if you have a question as to, you know, is this hymn theologically sound, check the Bible. And if they disagree, it's the hymn that's wrong, right? Not the other way around. So that's all I wanted to say on that. The last thing I wanted to talk about was the way I choose music. And all of these things wrap together. When I choose music, there's a few things that I'm doing. And I'm telling you this so that you can, you know, complain to me that I should do it differently if you want me to, but but I won't. So, first of all, knowing that we have different traditions from within this church, there are people who absolutely love hymns. They want to sing hymns. They want to sing four parts. They want to have written music, and I've fallen down on the job on that. I was supposed to be printing out all of our hymns, and I forgot to lately. But the traditional music is what they grew up with. It's what they love, and it's really good, powerful stuff. And we want to be able to share with them the music that they're comfortable with and that means a lot to their hearts. We do contemporary music for exactly the same reason. We have people who come up in that tradition, and we're trying to be able to worship together. We need to be able to use worship music that works for everybody. But the interesting thing, like a lot of times we end up with, in fact, I sort of intentionally picked several of the songs that we did today as examples. And you know my memory, I can't even remember what songs we just finished singing, so I'm looking them up here. Crossing the Jordan, a very syncopated song. Hard to keep up with that one, right? Let's see what... The very first song we did is Reckless Love. How many people sang that entire song all the way through in the same vocal range that I was using? Anybody?
I wouldn't know what a vocal range.
So Reckless Love goes low, it goes high, it pushes my range, and I don't, you know, I've got a fairly high voice, I like singing high. A lot of people don't have that range, I don't sing very well low, but it's a very difficult song just because it's got a huge vocal range. We did Shout to the Lord's, pretty reasonable, Christ Alone. Your Grace is Enough, again, we start out low, we go high. Lord, I need you. Again, this is an octave jumper, right? We go da 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 up an octave, you know, between verses. It's really hard to do some of these songs, and I picked them just trying to get that to get an understanding of one of the difficulties of modern contemporary music. It's actually hard for people to be able to sing along with a lot of it. And so sometimes people come to me and are like, oh, can we do this song? Can we do that song? And I'm like, yeah, it's a great song. No, can't do it. And it's for this reason. It's unsingable by a congregation. It can't be sung together. Sometimes we do slip those through. And like often the very first song we do, like Reckless Love, I will do something a little less congregationally because we do that song while people are still milling about and talking. And so part of the purpose of it, in fact, is to get people's attention. So if it gets really loud, that's good. People's attention, they sit down, and then they can join in with us. And then between the two readings, between the main reading and the children's reading, I sometimes think of that as just sort of an opportunity to do something sort of that the worship team wants to do that's got some technical things that are fun for them to try or for whatever reason. I just kind of consider that the playground space. We give ourselves a little bit of leeway. But outside of those two times, I really try hard to make sure the songs are songs that are singable by the whole congregation. And again, sometimes maybe we'll do, because people are so accustomed to singing along with the radio, not necessarily being able to sing every line. I don't have a rigid rule about it, but I... My goal is always every service to try to have worship music that's going to be meaningful to the congregation, that's going to bring us together as a congregation in worshiping God. And we talk about this pretty frequently in the worship team, that we're not, you know, our purpose is not performance. Our purpose is to bring the church together and be able to sing with us and we with the church, not you know, two separate entities. We want to be one entity singing together. So we try to do some hymns every week. We don't do it every week, especially if we don't have a piano player with us. We try to do some contemporary stuff. We try to do some slightly older stuff, you know, 70s, and really try to get a broad range of things. I usually don't know what Reg is going to talk about, but I do generally try to put together some kind of a theme within the music that we're doing, and it's surprising how often it turns out that theme actually matches what Reg was going to talk about. And I mean, Reg and I frequently marvel over this. Like, he's like, how did you know what I was talking about today? I was like, I had no idea, but I spent some time praying about the songs. I spent some time just digging through them and kind of seeing what worked, and this seemed like it'll work. He's like, yeah, well, it worked perfectly. That was, you know, I mean, he's even said to the congregation before, right? I didn't even need to preach today. The songs just covered everything. So anyway, that's kind of the way we do things here. So now you know. Just to reiterate, please take the time to learn the stuff that you don't, that you're not familiar with or comfortable with. But again, also really don't use any hymns or contemporary Christian music as your theology. That's what the Bible's for. Those are things that are just meant to support it. And look at that, 11:59, and I'm done. Boom. So let's close in prayer, and then we will have our closing song. Lord, thank you for this opportunity to share with the congregation and to the opportunity that I've had to spend contemplating why I do what I do and how it can be service to you. And just really thank you for the opportunity that you give us, as worship is such a joyous thing for us to do, and it's what you ask of us, that you ask us to worship you, and we find it to be so immensely enjoyable. And that's another one of your great blessings for us. Please keep us all safe today and throughout the week after we leave here. And thank you for the blessing of this church. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.